Let me add my welcome to Andrew. It's great to see the church full today. So welcome, everyone. And we're continuing our series, as Andrew said, in John chapter 13. It's Thursday night. The next day is Friday, Good Friday. Jesus is about to be killed. And we're just following the hours up to Jesus' death on the cross. So we're in chapter 13. And I'm actually going to backtrack a bit and read from a couple of weeks ago, just so we see the flow into this reading. So I'm going to start back at verse 21, but then the sermon will be from verse 36. Let's start from verse 21. Page 900, John chapter 13. After saying these things, Jesus was troubled in his spirit and testified, "Truly, truly, I say to you, one of you will betray me." The disciples looked at one another, uncertain of whom he spoke. One of his disciples, whom Jesus loved, was reclining at table at Jesus' side. So Simon Peter motioned to him to ask Jesus of whom he was speaking. So that disciple, leaning back against Jesus, said to him, "Lord, who is it?" Jesus answered, "It is he to whom I will give this bit of bread when I've dipped it." So when he dipped the morsel, he gave it to Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot. Then after he had taken the morsel, Satan entered into him. Jesus said to him, "What you are going to do, do quickly." Now, no one at the table knew why he'd said this to him. Some thought that because Jesus had the money bag, Jesus was telling him, "Buy what we need for the feast," or that he should give something to the poor. So after receiving the morsel of bread, he immediately went out, and it was night. So there's Judas. He snuck off to betray Jesus, to bring the soldiers, to arrest Jesus. And then, when he'd gone out, Jesus said, "Now is the Son of Man glorified, and God is glorified in him. If God is glorified in him, God will also glorify him in himself and glorify him at once. Little children, yet a little while I am with you. You will seek me. And just as I said to the Jews, so now also I say to you, where I am going, you cannot come. A new commandment I give to you, that you should love one another. Just as I've loved you, you are to love one another. By this, all people will know that you're my disciples, if you love one another." Simon Peter said to Jesus, "Lord, where are you going?" Jesus answered him, "Where I am going, you cannot follow me now, but you will follow afterwards." Peter said to him, "Lord, why can I not follow you now? I will lay down my life for you." Jesus answered, "Will you lay down your life for me? Truly, truly, I say to you, the cock will not crow until you have denied me three times. Let not your hearts be troubled. Believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many rooms. If it were not so, would I have told you that I go to prepare a place for you? And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and will take you to myself, that where I am, you may be also. And you know the way to where I'm going." Thomas said to him, "Lord, we don't know where you're going. How can we know the way?" Jesus said to him, "I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. If you had known me, you would have known my Father also. From now on, you do know him and have seen him." Well, we're going to look in this Sunday particularly at that most famous verse in verse 6, but we'll see how the whole of the conversation brings us to a climax there. And there's a handout, and it's got lots on it this week, so I hope it's going to help you. It's in lots of different colours, which is a surprise to me, actually. I'm colourblind, and on my computer it was all black. And then when I saw the printout, I realised that, without realising, I had accidentally changed the colour at various points. So it looks much nicer now than it did on my computer, but the colours are largely unintended, except for the little bits of blue, which I wanted to highlight. So there we are. Also, here's a tip. If you want to know where the sermon is going, it's a bit like a book or a film. You can skip right to the end of the DVD or the end of the book. And if you look at the coffee questions, that's what we're hoping you're going to discuss with each other afterwards. And these are the sorts of things we're going to be asking. How does this verse humble you? How does it comfort you? How does it motivate you? But at the moment, maybe it just angers you. Jesus says, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. It's an extremely controversial verse. It's the kind of verse that you're not supposed to say. Because in our society, we believe that each person must choose the truth that is right for him or her. So we don't mind people saying Jesus is a way, or I find Jesus to be a helpful truth. That's okay. But your neighbours might say, I find that Muhammad is a way, and that's okay as well. And somebody else says, I follow some of the Hindu ways, and somebody else says, I'm an atheist, and I just make the best of it myself as a human being and follow that way. And our society says, that's fine. All of the different ways can be okay. In fact, maybe, says our society, we agree with each other more than we actually realise. Maybe all the different religions of the world, they look so different, but actually, maybe below the surface, they're pretty similar. One of my favourite books of a few years ago, it was published in 2001, was the book The Life of Pi. I didn't read it straight away, I was a bit late. And then it became a film, and it became, it's one of the first sort of 3D, well, it wasn't the first 3D film, because things like Jaws, but it's one of the first of the latest wave of 3D films. And you might see it in the cinema. But the book The Life of Pi has this kind of perspective that maybe all religions are more similar than people know. Let me read you a quote from it. I know a woman here in Toronto who's very near dear to my heart. Though she's lived in Toronto for over 30 years, her French-speaking mind still slips on occasion on the understanding of English sounds. And so when she first heard of Harry Christianers, she didn't hear right. She heard hairless Christians. Like me. And that's what they were to her for many years. When I corrected her, I told her that in fact she wasn't so wrong. That Hindus, in their capacity for love, are indeed hairless Christians. Just as Muslims, in the way they see God in everything, are bearded Hindus, and Christians, in their devotion to God, are hat-wearing Muslims. You see, they look different. Some wear hats, some don't. In India, I think this is. Some have beards and some don't. But actually, they're all really the same. Jesus says he's a way, that's okay. Muhammad offers a way, that's okay. The Hindu gods offer a way. Atheism offers a way. And we're just to say that everyone can be right. But Jesus doesn't say that everyone can be right. He says, here's the way, and everyone else is not the way. He says, here's the truth, and everything else is not the truth. And that is something that really makes people very angry. Here's the verse again. Jesus said, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. I remember going to a funeral and doing a reading. And they had the big Bible up there in the crematorium. And this is quite a popular reading because there's a talk of Jesus going to his Father's house with lots of rooms and going to prepare a place for you. And people like that idea at funerals. But they'd just got a big marker pen in the Bible in the crematorium and put a big black line through the second half of verse 6. The first half's okay. I'm a way of the truth and life. But please don't read on. Because that's when it becomes exclusive. No one else can get you there. And that's what we're going to look at today. We're going to look not just at the verse, but the whole paragraph, and it's going to be even more shocking, even more uncomfortable. But in the end, I hope we'll get somewhere really useful. So firstly, you need to realize that Jesus is on a journey to heaven via the cross. He is going somewhere. That's in the background of this reading. I've just put a verse there from chapter 13, makes it really plain. Jesus knew that his hour had come to depart out of this world to the Father. He knew that he'd come from God and was going back to God. So Jesus getting ready to leave. He's packed up his suitcase. He's about to go back to heaven. Except that the way that Jesus goes back to heaven isn't by the Eurostar or by the church lift, which is the way to go to the Sunday school room, by pressing G for the ground floor, or down the stairs. Jesus gets to heaven by dying on the cross. And he's right that it's any moment now, because it's Thursday night, and Judas has already left. Later, the soldiers will arrive. They'll arrest him. He'll be tried through the night, and then executed the next day. I'm going, he says, but I'm going to heaven. And then I've crossed it out there because that isn't actually quite what Jesus says. Jesus says, I'm going to the Father. It's kind of the same thing. Jesus is ascending. He goes up into the sky to his Father. But I think it is significant that for Jesus, heaven isn't so much a place as it is a relationship. That's where he puts the emphasis. I'm going to the Father. Later, Jesus says that eternal life isn't so much a thing as it's a relationship. Eternal life means to know God, to be in a relationship with God. Now, it's true that Jesus does go to a place. I mean, he's not here now. He's in that other place called heaven. And it's true that we're going to have eternal life that's going to be real physical life. Our hearts are going to keep beating forever and with new bodies. That's true. But right at the heart of it, it's about knowing somebody. Jesus says the time has come for him to go out of this world to the Father. That's where Jesus is going. And Jesus says that those who reject him can't go there. Jesus is going to the Father, but those who reject Jesus cannot go to the Father. I've been teaching John's Gospel at my other job, at the Cornhill Training Course. It's a kind of Bible college course. And it's quite handy because I try to, as much as I can, to choose the same books to teach there as we're studying together at Grace Church, because then you help me with my lectures. And I was saying to them that one of the ways that John's Gospel works is it's not so much just in chunks, here's a block of 10 verses, but it's in strands. There's ideas that follow all the way through the gospel. And so quite a lot, we've been turning back and flipping forward and looking over the whole thing. And this is a great example of it. So Jesus here points us backwards to chapter 8 and then points us forwards to chapter 18. And so that you don't get lost, I've printed out the verses we need on the sheet. But you'll see, first of all, he gives us a flashback. He says, just as I said to the Jews, so now also I say to you, where I'm going, you cannot come. Here's the conversation Jesus had with the Jewish leaders, the Pharisees, back in chapter 8. It's getting quite heated. They're trading arguments. And the Pharisees said to Jesus, where is your Father? Jesus answered, you don't know me and you don't know my Father. If you did know me, you would know my Father as well. These words he spoke in the treasury as he taught in the temple, but no one arrested him because his hour hadn't yet come. So that's back in chapter 8. People already hate Jesus, but they're not ready to arrest him. That's what's about to happen now on this Thursday night. So back in chapter 8, Jesus said to them, I'm going away and you'll seek me and you will die in your sin. Where I am going, you cannot come. I told you that you would die in your sin. Unless you believe that I am he, you will die in your sin. Now, this is Jesus being quite rude. Sort of the equivalent of you having an argument with somebody and saying, you're going to hell. That's basically what he's saying. He says, I am going to heaven. I'm going to the Father, and you can't come. You're not going to go there. You're not on the way to the same place. Instead, you are going to die as God's enemies. You're going to die unprepared for judgment day. You are going to die and be excluded from the paradise that I'm going to. It seems very harsh, but Jesus isn't just being grumpy in an argument. They kind of bring it upon themselves. He says you can't go there because you're not interested in the way there. If Jesus is the way and they're rejecting the way, then you can't go. I'm trying to extend this analogy with Nathan's little story of the Sunday school. I was going to use a different one, but I like the Sunday school one so well. But it's going to be a bit weird. It's like you saying, I hate lifts, and I want to go to the Sunday school room. Well, that's okay, because you could use the stairs. But I hate lifts, and I hate stairs. And I hate parachutes and ropes. And I hate all ways of descending downwards. It doesn't quite work, the analogy, does it? Because there's only one way to heaven. There's actually quite a lot of different ways to the Sunday school room. But the point is, if you hate lifts, you're not going to get there. You hate stairs, you hate ropes. They say, we don't like you, Jesus. And Jesus says, well, I'm the way. So if you reject me, you can't go there. But actually, it's even worse than that. It's not just that they reject the way, but they don't even know the destination. See, there's no consensus about where they're going. Jesus says, you don't know me and you don't know my Father. And the whole point is Jesus going to the Father. They don't even know who that is. One of the problems with the theory that all the different religions of the world are just different ways to the same place is they're not even claiming to go to the same place. It's not like the consensus is we all want to go to the Sunday school room. How should we get there? Some people don't even believe there is a Sunday school room. Some people don't want to go to the Sunday school room at all. They want to go to France. And we're all pursuing different directions. So for the atheist, there isn't even a God to get to. For the Hindu, the ultimate expression is to go round and round in cycles as you're reincarnated over and over again. For the Buddhist, those cycles climax in a great nirvana, a great nothingness, when your soul is liberated and becomes one with everything. It's not headed for a relationship, it's headed for a non-relationship, to be dissolved into nothingness. So it's not just like we've got the same destination and different theories. You know, like people in London like to say, oh, how are you going to get to Hammersmith? Are you going to do the DLR? Or are you going to get the train? Endless conversations about that in London, and there's lots of different ways. It's like one person's trying to go to Hammersmith and someone else is trying to go to King's Cross. Someone's trying to go to the Father, someone's trying to go to nothing. Someone doesn't even believe there is a nothing. Jesus says to these guys, you don't know me, and you don't even know the Father, and you can't go there. Let me just emphasize this. Jesus is saying that if you don't follow Jesus, you cannot head for this ultimate relationship that we're made for. He's saying that Islam is a dead end. It will not take you to God. Hinduism is a lie. Here's the truth, and everything else is not the truth. He's saying that atheism is false. The idea that when we die, we just decompose and that's it. There's going to be a great surprise for the atheist when they die and they meet God on his judgment throne. That is not the destination. You'll see we've got a big questions series. The regulars know about this already, but once a month in the local pub in the Spanish Galleon, we try to tackle a big issue that people are asking about. The next one is going to be, what is the future for the human race? And there's lots of different ideas about the future, aren't there? Will the eventually the sun will run out of energy and the heat death of the universe? Or will before that we run out of ecological resources? Or will there be some super virus that wipes us all out? Or there's lots of different theories. And Jesus, there's a judgment day. And there is a Father to meet. And if you don't trust in me, you will not be in a relationship with him. You'll die in your sin. No other way but Jesus. Number two. Now you might be thinking at that point, I kind of knew that. Maybe it's made that more black and white than I'd like it to be, but I sort of knew that. But that's okay because I'm a Christian and I follow Jesus. And that's how I respond to it and how many here will respond to it. But in which case, it's point number three that's going to make us a little bit uncomfortable. So this is Jesus talking to his followers, his disciples, and he says to them, as I told the Jews, I say to you, where I'm going, you cannot come. What? No, but we're your friends. You know, we've been hanging out with you this whole time. We trust you. And then he makes it slightly less scary. In verse 36, where I'm going, you cannot come now, but you will come later, afterwards. And at this point, Simon Peter gets a bit impatient. Jesus, I want to come now. Peter is somebody who loves Jesus, and he is very up for it when it comes to following Jesus. Jesus, I'll go wherever you take me. I'm going to stick by you. I'm ready to follow you anywhere. And before we sort of go to the end of the story, which becomes quite sad, I want to say that in some ways, Peter, he really is telling the truth about his loyalty to Jesus. He really does love Jesus, and he really is willing to die with Jesus. So when in a few hours' time the soldiers turn up, you know what Peter does? There's a whole platoon of soldiers, and Peter takes out his sword, and he attacks them. I mean, he can't win, can he? Because, I mean, there's all these soldiers and just little Peter. But he is willing to defend Jesus to the death. And he even cuts off the high priest's servant's ear. His name is Malchus. We know this guy's name. And Peter isn't bluffing. He's not a coward. And he's not a pagan. He's a devoted disciple of Jesus. And he is ready to follow Jesus anywhere. And yet Jesus says to Peter, to the Christian, where I'm going, you cannot follow now. Why not? I want to go now. No, you've got to wait till afterwards. And of course, afterwards means you've got to wait until after tomorrow, till after I've died. You cannot come to the Father until I've died. And by the way, Peter, I'm going to die alone. And although you're feeling brave right now, let me tell you that the cock, it won't get to the morning. The cock won't crow until you have denied me three times. And then we watch it unfold. Now, I think the idea here to say, oh, Peter, what a coward. I could have done better. The point is to say, Peter, what a hero. He's someone who loves Jesus, who risks his neck for Jesus, who'll fight for Jesus. But in the end, somebody who needs Jesus. And he can't do it on his own. That's what we've called this sermon, Don't Be a Hero. In some ways, it's great that Peter's a hero. We want Christians to be heroes. But at the end, we've got to realize that before the cross, all of us need rescuing before we can do any heroics. We start as failures before we're able to serve. I put down at the bottom of the sheet there, like Peter, we overestimate our loyalty to Jesus and underestimate our sin. So here are the kinds of people we've covered so far. We're going to upset almost everyone by the end of this, I think. So we've covered everyone who believes any other religion or ideology. That's probably going to upset a few people. So Muslims, Hindus, atheists, dead end. And all Christians who love Jesus and want to be heroic for him. Dead end. Okay, so that's almost everybody. I was talking to Andrew on over the weekend about who the kind of person is who's most in danger of being a Peter. Who is the Peter? And we're saying, actually, it is the person who really is quite devoted to Jesus. They're going to be the person who is at the heart of things at Grace Church, and they're full of energy and zeal, and they're a bit frustrated sometimes at other people who aren't quite as full of energy and zeal, and they come and say, come on, let's get things done. Let's do this. And yet there can be that moment of great humbling when we realize that we're not as loyal and we're more sinful than we realize. We underestimate our sin. We overestimate our loyalty. I was talking to somebody the other day who'd struggled for some years with chronic fatigue. That's a horrible thing to go through if you are a Peter, right? So you're the person here. I can do all these things. And then suddenly you're incapacitated. That's a very humbling thing. But actually the problem we need to deal with is not just our chronic fatigue, but our chronic sinfulness. I will always be someone who needs Jesus before I can serve Jesus. Actually, he's just teaching this lesson again and again, isn't he? It was the same lesson at the foot washing. Peter's like saying, no, you're never going to wash me, Jesus. Peter, I need to wash you. If I don't wash you, you can have no part in me. And here it's the same idea. I'll go and die for you. No, Peter, you actually won't. You're going to deny me before the cock crows. You need me more than I need you. You need me to serve you before you can do any service of me. And that's very humbling. See, there is only one person who can get us to the Father. And it's not Muhammad or Vishnu or Richard Dawkins or ourselves. That's the Peter error, isn't it? Not the other religions, nor ourselves, nor even the Christian version of ourselves. The zealous Grace Church Greenwich member version of ourselves. No, you cannot go now, but you will follow afterwards. And I love that word. It's just, that's why I put it in blue. It got a bit out of control and I did the whole colours of the rainbow. But it's a wonderful word, isn't it? You cannot follow me now. You can't follow me now Thursday night. But you will be able to follow after, as in after Good Friday, after the cross. We're going to speed up a bit. And I've given you a diagram to try and show you how it works. This confused me a bit when I first read it. I thought it might have confused you as well, and hopefully a diagram will help. So Jesus says, I'm going to prepare a place, then I'm coming back, and then I'm going to bring you with me. Which sounds simple enough, doesn't it? I mean, you know, it's like saying, I'll go home and put the oven on and put the pizzas in, but you don't know the way to my house, so I'll come back and get you, and I'll take you to my house, and by then the pizzas will be ready. I mean, it's a kind of simple enough concept. But it gets tricky when you think, oh, hang on a minute, but when did he go and when's he come back? So I got a bit confused thinking, is Jesus coming back when he comes back from heaven in the future and he's already gone now, etc.? No, I think that's how it works. Going here means going at the cross. It means dying. And coming back here means what happens 3 days later on Sunday when he's resurrected. And then taking us to be with him means all of Christian history, the time that we're in now. Right, so Jesus has gone, he's come back, resurrection, and now he is taking people with him to be where he is. And that is the whole of the last 2,000 years as Christians die and go to be with Jesus. And I put there on the sheet, there is a future day when Jesus comes back again. He comes from heaven, he brings with him all the Christians who died trusting in him, and he descends from heaven and brings about a new heaven and a new earth. And John himself talks about that in the book of Revelation, chapter 21. But that is not what this passage is about. That is outside of this diagram at some point in the future. Get it? So Jesus goes. He goes by the cross. He comes. He comes at the resurrection. And now he is the way for all who trust him. With that in mind, just look at chapter 14, verse 1. Let not your hearts be troubled. Why are they troubled? Well, there's a lot of quite troubling things going on this evening. Jesus has just said, one of you will betray me, and they have no idea who he means. That's troubling. Then Jesus said, I'm going and you can't come with me. That's pretty troubling. And then he said to his closest friend, you are about to deny me 3 times. So there's quite a lot to be upset about, actually. Actually, once you realize your weakness, it's quite troubling. I mean, some people aren't afraid to die, are they? But people aren't afraid to die going to 2 categories. Either someone has got this and trusts Jesus, or someone's full of bravado. And they have the bravado, and now it's evaporated, and now they're scared. You should be scared. You're not going to make it by yourself. You can't come now. And then Jesus says, just that Peter is at the low point. I imagine he's like winded. He's still recovering from this prediction of his disloyalty. He says, but don't worry, Peter. I mean, you are going to deny me, but don't worry. Because I am going to prepare a place for you. You never get there by yourself, but I'm going to prepare a place for you. And he means, I'm going to die. It's a wonderful, purposeful way, isn't it, of talking about Jesus' execution. It's not that the soldiers are going to come and drag me away against my will. We see that Jesus basically hands himself over to them. It's not that they get the better of him at his trial. He basically gives them the conviction that they're looking for. He lets them nail him to a cross. Because he knows, in this death, to bring forgiveness, to take away God's anger at your sin, I am opening the way. I am preparing a place for you. And then you know it's worked because 3 days later he comes back. Says, oh, I've got it ready. The rooms are ready for you. And at the resurrection they meet him and it's evidence that this is real. And then he says, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. If you'd known me, you would have known my Father also. From now on, you do know him and have seen him. So here, just to close, are some bullet points. We do know the way. If you're a Christian, you know the way personally. You know the Lord Jesus, and he is the one who will get us there. Not Muhammad, not Vishnu, not atheism. Not ourselves, not our Christian selves, but Jesus. That is the way. And if you're not a Christian today, you're very welcome. It's great to have you here. But now you know the way. You might not have put your trust in him, but Jesus is telling us, I am the way. It's not a secret. He's the one you've got to trust. He can get you there. We know the way and we know the destination. Do you remember in chapter 8, you don't know my Father? You've no idea even where you're going. But now Jesus says, you do know my Father. You know God. More about that next week. But you've begun this relationship that I've died to open up for you. Not a mystery. And then Jesus says, there is no other way. We by ourselves cannot find the way. Jesus says, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. Well, here's some applications. If you're following another way, it's a dead end. Turn to Jesus. He's the only one who can get you there. I don't think that's probably many of us here. Maybe there's somebody here following another ideology. But many of us here, we've got friends who follow other ideologies. And we're just not quite ready to be socially unacceptable enough to tell them that. We know it's a dead end, but we keep quiet. Yeah, by all means, yeah, try to get to the Sunday school room by going in the lift and going up. Sure, try it. It's just because it would be a bit embarrassing to say, but you do realize it's downstairs, don't you? I mean, it's a stupid example. No one would mind telling you a different direction to a Sunday school room. But we're very hesitant to tell people a different direction to eternity and to God. It's just unacceptable in our culture. But don't let somebody go the wrong way. I've told this story before in Grace Church, but a few years ago I was on a train and I was trying to go to Bristol, I think, and I looked out the window and I was reading the signs of the various stations on the way and I just thought, I don't think they're on the way to Bristol. And I asked someone else on the train, excuse me, is this train going to Bristol? And she looked at me as if to say, like, no, and what on earth are you doing on this train, you idiot? And fortunately, she said, no, it's not going to Bristol, and you need to change trains. Now, I didn't think that was particularly rude of her. That was actually quite helpful. But imagine if she thought, oh, it would be very awkward, wouldn't it? It would be very awkward to disabuse him of his own particular navigational choices. So she could have smiled weakly and said, well, well done. Yeah, I mean, enjoy the train your own way. And then I'd have ended up wherever it was going, Southampton or something, and an even longer journey to retrace my steps as it was I got off at the next station and started turning my way back. We do it with directions, but we're scared to do it about eternity. But we need to do it. If Jesus is right, he's the only way, then lots and lots of people in Greenwich are on dead-end ways that will not get them there. Jesus says, unless you believe in me, you will die in your sin. But secondly, if we're Christians, and many of us are, maybe we can be Peter-like Christians. Christians who trust in our own acts of service to Jesus, the things we can do for him. And Jesus wants to humble us and says, No, don't overestimate your loyalty. Don't underestimate your sin, the ways that you're going to stumble and trip up. And if it was down to you to get there, you would not make it. You cannot go now, he says. You will follow afterwards, after I've died for you. It's easy, isn't it, to put your trust in service that you do as a Christian. I think I enjoy the privilege I have here to teach Grace Church Greenwich and to lead Grace groups, and others of you love those things as well, Sunday school, PA team, other ways in which you serve them. We can trust us, and when they're taken away, we can feel very insecure, and I wonder why that is. You know, you're ill and you can't do it. I remember reading the words of Martin Lloyd-Jones, who 50 years ago was the most famous preacher in England, and he had an enormous ministry. People knew him everywhere. And then he became elderly and infirm, and he couldn't do the same preaching. I mean, obviously, he had to take retirement and was sitting at home. And somebody asked him how he felt now he was unable to do all these great things in his Christian service. And he replied with the words of Luke's gospel, where Jesus says, do not rejoice that the spirits submit to you, but rejoice that your names are written in heaven. It's the same lesson as this. You know, don't put your trust in the heroics that you've been able to do for Jesus, like Peter. Ultimately, put your security in what he has done for us. He's gone. He's prepared a place. He's come back at the resurrection. And now he comes to take those who trust him with him to be in a relationship with the Father forever. Until one day he comes back and brings about a new heaven and a new earth. We're going to take a pause and then we're going to pray together.